Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
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 Yes, welcome to Sci-Fi, a podcast in which three nondescript people review audiobooks.
I have descriptors. I am a humanoid.
You have many descriptors who review audiobooks of a science fictional or fantastic nature.
Scientifiction, you mean?
Scientifiction, of course. The only term that we in the Hugo Gernsback reality use to talk about what the humans might call science fiction. Let me put on my concentrator helmet and we can continue this.
I don't know. This feels like more like a, you know, reality A, and that's a reality B.
Today, we will be reviewing The Sleeping Giants by Sylvain Nouvel.
Hope we got that right. Sleeping Giants part in particular.
Barry, would you give us a reading from the back of the book, please?
Absolutely. A girl named Rose is riding her new bike near her home in Deadwood, South Dakota. When she falls through the earth, she wakes up at the bottom of a square hole, its walls glowing with intricate carvings. But the firemen who come to save her peer down upon something even stranger, a little girl in the palm of a giant metal hand. 17 years later, Rose Franklin is now a highly trained physicist leading a top-secret team to crack the hand's code, and along with her colleagues, she is being interviewed by a nameless interrogator whose power and purview are as enigmatic as the provenance of the relic. What's clear is that Rose and her compatriots are at the edge of unraveling history's most perplexing discovery and figuring out what it portends for humanity. But once the pieces of the puzzle are in place, will the result prove to be an instrument of lasting peace or a weapon of mass destruction?
All right. So, Kevin, what do you think of this book?
It's not bad. Overall, I liked it. It did kind of drag towards the end, I found. And I really like, not episodic, but what do you call it? Like sort of, you know, this, the format of the diary format.
Sure.
In general. So it could have been my internal expectations were a little too high for this particular book. But overall, I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah, I like the first part a lot better myself. Overall, yeah, I thought that this was a good book. I really like a good sort of scavenger hunt in a science fiction story. I kind of like this sort of Indiana Jones-ish, then we solve this mystery, then we solve that mystery, and then we solve that mystery. And so then I sort of settled in and thought, oh, this is going to be that fun kind of light adventure story where, oh, we're going to find the arm, and then we're going to find the head, and then each thing, it's going to be basically a video game.
Right, or it's like, okay, now that we have the next piece, it'll do something cool, and then it'll help us to find the next thing or something like that. And I guess what I realized towards the end is it was like there's a lot less science fiction in this book than I was expecting. It was sort of like they allude to science fiction elements, but no science fiction really happened other than walking around a little bit with the thing.
Well, I think what you mean...
Other than the giant robot.
Okay.
Sorry.
I really like the book.
Good. Glad to hear it.
I do think that the last half of the book was a lot different than the first half.
Right.
I think different people might appreciate different halves of the book for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. So, once again, I think that for me it was a problem of expectations because I sort of jumped right on and thought, okay, yeah, scavenger hunt, and it's going to be all sort of Indiana Jonesy, and it's all going to be just, you know, nonstop wonders. And instead, then it becomes this socio-political novel towards the end about the dangers of having too powerful a weapon. And
right, there's like commentary on sort of like, well, some plans need more than an 8-year lifespan, so we'll just ignore whatever the president wants because whatever, you know, it doesn't really.
Men in Black.
I thought it was a great lesson in, you know, government planning.
Right.
Indeed.
I grew to be amused by the secret interrogator. At the very, very beginning of the book, the first two or three interviews, it was a little bit, you know, stilted in the interaction, I thought, with the multiple actors.
Right.
And it just felt like first season of like Next Generation or something, where it's just sort of like it felt a little like
take that back.
Wow. I think Steven's got an opinion on this one.
But
the door didn't open and I ran into it. What happened?
but they pretty quickly they got into the rhythm, so.
Yeah, it took about an hour of content for them to like sort of be comfortable with each other, I think.
They may not have been recording in the same room.
Well, it's also possible.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if that's what happened or something. But
Or this could be whoever was playing the voice of the interrogator sort of settled into the role. And
Right. So this is, as you said, sort of a mock documentary format.
Well, it's sort of like the journal format where they have documents that are being read out and the characters who created the documents or in the interviews, the two parts.
Right. It's the World War Z format.
Right. Exactly.
Not the movie, the book.
Anyway, yes, I think it's time for us to reverse our knees and get in giant robots and
click, click.
Walk with increasing agony into our spoiler-filled discussion zone.
Yay.
We shall return, for we are sci-fi.
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 And welcome back to our discussion section, where we are going to discuss spoilers about the book. So,
hey, there's a giant in this book. Did you know that?
An iron giant?
Well, he's made of something, but I don't know if it's iron.
It's a she.
Isn't it iridium? Anyway.
Argon 37, right?
Argon 37?
Well, it's not made of argon 37.
Since that's a gas.
We'll go into the argon angle.
Will we really? Okay.
Fake elements. Fake elements.
No, that was real. Actually, that was my chosen favorite part was the argon 37 angle.
I don't even remember this part.
This was your favorite scene?
Well, I had a really hard time picking it because the format was not really, you know, action or scene oriented. It was like interview, so it was kind of a very passive way to describe what happened in a lot of cases. But anyway, so the doctor is trying to figure out, well, how come it showed up now? You know, why didn't it show up when they discover, like, oh, it's been like buried for 5,000 years or whatever it is, and how come it just magically showed up? And
you mean the hand when she fell through the hole?
Yeah. So then she figured out, oh, she thought it was because argon 37 is created near nuclear fission. And so, like, if you set off a nuclear bomb, or if you have a little bit of, presumably also any kind of nuclear reaction like that, it generates argon 37. And so she said, oh, well, maybe it's activated because it's detecting argon 37. And it's a clever way for a advanced civilization to say, well, it's like the monolith in 2001, right?
That was something that sort of startled me, was the fact that they made a bunch of regular pop culture references, but no science fiction references whatsoever.
Yeah, that was sort of peculiar as well.
So they talked around 2001 to a tremendous degree. So if you wanted to find out if the human race had reached the moon, then you would put something on the moon. And then they still don't mention 2001, which was starting to drive me a little nuts.
Right. They just said, well, this is what happened.
Right.
And so then I was thinking, well, then maybe this is in the past. Maybe this is in the future. I'm trying to bend my brain around, why don't they mention 2001?
He's like, 2000 what? We don't watch old weird movies like that. Like,
well, I mean, they do have a long discourse about how do you tell when a civilization has reached, you know, some sort of scientific, you know, literacy point.
Right.
Right. That was the whole point here, was that, oh, if you look for argon 37 specifically, that's only, you know, occurring in this certain circumstance of, you know, nuclear fission. So therefore, activate when you see that, and they've reached a certain point.
Right. But they've learned to manage to finally blow themselves up. So let's help them move it along.
Potentially, or maybe, because they did say later on that, oh, these were supposedly there to protect against evil aliens from another alien, you know, kingdom or something. So maybe if they have nuclear weapons, it would detect that too, you know, but probably it was when the humans reached that level.
Right. My point really was that just that they made plenty of regular pop cultural references, but no science fiction ones. And that makes me think that maybe some of the mismatch I was facing was, this is a science fiction novel that is actually written for a non-science fiction audience.
Yeah, didn't we read a book like that recently?
It happens every once in a while.
Like, as you said, it didn't seem to fulfill the contract of a science fiction book. Well,
this one more or less fulfills the contract of a science fiction
book. Yeah, I mean, there was plenty of science in here. Sure. I mean, there was even the thing where, you know, like, well, we're going to need to, you know, get all these various chemicals, even though there's, you know, very little of it on the planet, because we're going to have to be able to spread this stuff over a wide area to make the pieces of the robot show itself. And
right. This is definitely fulfills all of the aspects of a science fiction book. It just seemed so weird to me that there were a few cases where they could have used a lot of shorthand and just said, you know, like 2001, you know, right. Like Contact, you know, right. Like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, you know, like where they were talking about this. So I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like Contact. And, you know, like when he goes into that whole thing about, and then this language is like this. And I'm like, seriously, they didn't know? You're the first person to think that because, you know, I've read Contact and that's how they do it there. And like,
and the language is from right to left. And yeah.
And it's all based on octal, right? You know, their mathematics.
You know, it's really difficult. Then they go into this long discussion of octal. And I'm just like, well, I mean, I'm a computer programmer. We use octal on Unix all the time. Okay, I guess, you know, guess it requires a long explanation.
Is it now time for the how come computer scientists confuse Oct 31 with Tech 25? The horrible joke of why do they confuse Christmas and Halloween?
Why is it big Endian and not little Endian? What?
Because, yes, octal 31 is equal to decimal 25. Woo.
Kevin, true to form, managed to tell the joke backwards.
Yes.
I wonder if that's how Yoda tells jokes.
Laugh you will.
How you
to get to the other side, the chicken must go.
How you compute so big with numbers like these?
Oh, God.
So let's see. My favorite scene was, I think, the beginning just with her falling and being caught by this sort of giant hand in the dirt. I thought that that was a really vivid image that, you know, you didn't necessarily get quite so much later on because it's all sort of faux documentary format.
Right. Yeah, I could see this working well as a movie or something.
I certainly think so, yes.
Yeah, I think this would be a really good movie.
Well, yeah, I guess that was, you know, to go back to that, I think that was my main issue was the expectation because it was called Sleeping Giants. I figured, oh, this is going to be like this crazy like mech battle where they would like all the different countries of Earth would uncover these giant mechs and then they would like have mech battles or something.
And then
that didn't happen.
At the end, there can only be one.
Right.
Yes. The problem with this kind of scavenger hunt kind of book is that it generally assumes various forms of the ancient astronaut hypothesis. That, oh, well, there used to be a superior human civilization or humanoid civilization on Earth. And somehow the whole evolutionary record is just a coincidence for some reason.
Right. And, you know, of course, when you read stuff like this, and like you said, when they're doing the scavenger hunt, I mean, the timeline doesn't work exactly, but your brain kind of jumps into things like, oh, well, you know, there could be all sorts of wacky things. Like they'll find the head inside of, you know, the Pyramid of Giza or something, or the pyramid's like a transformer or something crazy. You know?
I had a similar like movie.
Rotate the top.
Yeah.
I had a similar like movie mashup, you know, at several points during this book. You know, one of them I was kind of giggling about when they're reassembling the robot. I sort of had this flashback to, you know, when C-3PO gets blown up.
Oh.
Right. And Chewbacca basically starts to, you know, put his head on backwards and he's like yelling at him about it and calling him a stupid furball. And,
right.
You know, except, you know, I imagine Vin Diesel as the giant robot.
Oh, right.
He's like, you bleeping idiot.
Well, yes.
And like starts blowing stuff up. And
super morons.
Yes. Well, he was the Iron Giant. Yeah.
Yes. So
my favorite scene,
yes,
which is I think probably about halfway through the book when the interrogator finally gets sort of surprised by meeting with somebody at a Chinese restaurant someplace.
Right. So our main narrator is somebody who's just always going in and asking somebody questions, and he always sort of is the one in the know. And he gets this sort of surprise, weird phone call from somebody on a secure line saying, meet me at such and such a place.
Yes. And it turns out to be it's what it sounds like. It's like an older gentleman. It reminded me a lot of The Princess Bride, you know, the opening scene where, you know, grandpa comes by to read, you know, the sick Fred Savage.
I think that perhaps the person reading it was doing a bit of a Peter Falk impression.
It's possible. I don't know.
He was certainly doing an impression of somebody or something.
But, you know, he starts telling, you know, our interrogator about this alien civilization and how they're, you know, they planted the robots on, you know, planets around the galaxy, I guess. And,
right.
You know, it's really sort of what's going on and how the words for some of our, you know, Roman and Greek gods have come about. But it did remind me a lot of that first scene from The Princess Bride, and immediately asked myself, is there going to be kissing? And turns out the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is one of those books.
It's just like a horror movie where once you kiss, bad things happen to you.
I'm not seeing any downside.
So, yes, after the kissing scene, the other guy, you know, smashes his legs with a truck.
That's actually what Barry's into.
You mean you don't want magic knees?
It's like that movie Crash. That was the Soderbergh one.
Vincent Couture, the Canadian leg man.
God. Ex-leg man.
Well, he had new legs after they strong-armed the doctor into, you know, retrofitting him.
I'll have to say that I would have been really disappointed and irritated if they didn't do that. I mean, that seems like it's very set up in retrospect where it's like, oh, this horrible thing happened to your knees. Well, luckily we can put bionic knees that bend backwards like the aliens do in the control harness.
It's like Forrest Gump. We're going to give you magic knees.
I sort of wonder if, like, the narrator behind the scenes somewhere is just like, okay, so in this case we'll do this, and in this case we'll do this. So in this case where these two get into a lover's spat and somebody gets their knees crushed by a truck, I'll fly in this doctor.
I think we have a new challenge here. I think we should put together the movie for this book based solely on cut scenes from other movies.
Doable.
Redubbing.
Okay, do you have any suggestions for which movies?
Well, you know, I mean, the obvious ones come to mind are like probably like Contact and obviously the Iron Giant. That way we get Vin Diesel in here.
Okay.
Should be awesome.
Yes.
So what you're proposing is that there are cut scenes from The Princess Bride where Peter Falk, I mean, it was Peter Falk, right?
Yes, I believe that's who it was, yes.
You know, now I'm envisioning a far superior version of Princess Bride where he's actually telling his grandson about their heritage as members of this intellectual elite that's descended from an alien civilization.
Yes, you are a descendant of Themis.
Exactly.
I guess the only person I can't fill the role for is the interrogator or our main narrator.
It's also, what's his name from Princess Bride? You know, you killed my father, prepared to die.
Manny Patinkin?
Yeah, he looks kind of like that now, right? And he also plays that CIA guy in the, you know, that other show. Wait,
he looks like what now?
I don't know. He looks sort of like I would envision that the narrator to look.
Great. All right. Okay. So I guess we're on to the usual questions already. Was there tea?
I don't recall any.
Uncharacteristically, none of us can remember. Plenty of Kung Pao chicken, though.
Yes, there was Kung Pao chicken. They may have served tea at the same place they served Kung Pao chicken, but I don't think it was mentioned.
The weird thing about this book is it felt to me like a prequel to a series that isn't there yet, because it's like, oh, and this is how they found the giant mech, you know, basically. It's like...
Right, exactly.
It is a series, right? I think book two is already out.
Okay.
And I don't know if this is... It's more geopolitical stuff or if the aliens finally decide to show up and...
Well, it's basically a long, drawn-out description of how the guy with the broken legs learned how to break dance, and so the robots break dancing, and they're going to do the thing where they, instead of fighting with giant robots, they break dance with giant robots.
They're going to have a dance-off?
Yeah, basically. It worked in the 80s.
I don't understand why it wouldn't work now, then.
All right, so I guess the next usual question is, what character do you want to be, and or who would you be?
I want to be Vincent. I want to have the awesome reversible knees and, you know, disappoint my father at the age of 8.
I don't know. I think of you as more a Kara Resnick type.
Really?
I think you'd be the old guy.
Well, I mean, there's worse things than to be possibly immortal, because the guy sort of keeps on hinting at the fact that, you know, he's been around for a really long time.
Right. Like, he might have been, like, really young when they first deposited the parts of the robots on the planet.
Exactly. I want to be the giant robot.
Yeah, if it was sentient, it'd be awesome.
Sentience is overrated.
Yeah, we all know about your issue with sentience.
Yeah, just tell me what to do.
Space vampire.
All right, Kevin?
I don't know. If it was sentient, I would like to be the giant robot, probably. It would be cool, but I'm trying to think who I would be. I don't know. I guess I'd be the Dr. Franklin, who magically appears at the end and mysteriously and in a weird, that's like, right. What? I didn't quite understand what that was supposed to be. Was she regenerated by the robot in a weird way or something? Like, you were time, you know, I don't know. It was just weird.
Yeah, she shows up like in Serbia or something, or someplace random.
It was some random sequel setup.
When she got vaporized by...
Well, we assume, right? Maybe she was just transported to the future and her memory was wiped.
But no, I mean, like scars that she would have gotten since then or something. It was implied that there was physical differences as well.
Well, and maybe she was scanned when she put the helmet on or something, or who knows.
Yeah, I guess. But she also didn't remember, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And so, yeah, there was just this final bit where...
It was like the Marvel, you know, end credit scene or something. Where it's like,
There's no body, so therefore the superhero didn't die and will make an appearance later.
Right. There was this final sequence where the head of the project for a long time suddenly appears out of nowhere and is being interviewed, and she has no memory of the project or anything going on with it. And there's no explanation for that. I actually thought initially that, first of all, I didn't recognize the voice actress, so I didn't realize that this was Rose that was back again. I thought it might have been some other variant of Kara. And since they were talking so much about how they had extracted sperm and eggs from the Kara, two possible pilots, that perhaps they had simply cloned her.
Yeah, I thought that at first for a second, too.
You know, just like, okay, no, that didn't make any sense. So I didn't love that bit on the end, but then again, I completely forgot about it. So I guess it didn't really bother me that much.
So I really like the concept of the robot absorbing all sorts of, you know, kinetic and non-kinetic energy and converting it back into, you know, some sort of outburst.
Right.
Almost. I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, that was actually a neat, one of my other favorite scenes in the book was the sub scene where whoever it was, I guess Kara was there, right? And she sort of freaks out, like, you know, grabs a gun and like takes the captain of the submarine is like, you know, destroy the thing that we're trying to save. And
to be fair, I don't think she actually freaked out. She was just basically pulling a power move.
Oh, right. I don't think she was freaking out. I think she just suddenly took charge, you know, in a very, you know, like, we're going to do this right now.
Right.
For sure. Because, you know, someone's going to hit the button and it could be me because after I shoot all of you. But, you know, that was just sort of like another demonstration of, yeah, you'd fire a few missiles at it and it just sort of like does some weird quasi EMP thing. And
right. Well, okay. I think it's time for, once again, I don't have anything clever. All right.
Nothing pithy to say.
No, I never do.
Well, you know, we can,
I am Groot.
We can wait for the invasion of the further giants.
Wow, that was great. Yeah.
Well, maybe you could say something along those lines.
Along the lines of we can wait for the invasion of the further giants.
you're not gonna sing your They Might Be Giants songs.
Okay, we can wait for Ultraman to come.
I think all the, you know, the robots they're gonna find more robots on Earth and they're gonna form some sort of giant Voltron robot in the future.
No, I think that they will just program the robots to become more intelligent and much larger. Just like Jaguar.
Yes.
This goes out to all the Godzilla versus Megalon fans out there.
The Giotto Jaguar or whatever?
Giotto Jaguar.
Yeah.
With his theme song, Jet Jaguar, Jet Jaguar.
That is appropriate.
Maybe this is the part where we actually ask everybody to influence the Parsec Award judges.
Yes. So we have already submitted our names for the Parsec Awards.
Use your mind powers to make sure we win.
Mind powers to make sure we win.
Or use a foregone conclusion.
Use your money.
I mean, I am hoping to become a finalist. That's really all my hopes extend towards. All right, then. Until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
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 Superman.